Genesis 18. That song we just heard was testing. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Okay, continue on. I think they're working on it there. Back there. Just let me use a handheld mic if it'd be easier. You okay? Okay. Thank you. Yeah, the song that we just heard. Who knows? Anyone know who that artist was? Anyone recognize her from an Israeli artist? Her name is Rita. Rita. David, you know Rita? So she's. Is that her last name? I don't know. But, you know, Hapa'am is time, and as Jennifer said earlier, you know, we just don't know how much time we have. God knows what our, you know, Psalm 31:15, my times are in your hand, oh God, my times are in your hand. So we need to treasure the times that we have with our loved ones and with our spiritual family as well, and, you know, with each one. With our and take and treasure each one, because we don't know how long we have, but we need to treasure and be grateful and take time to appreciate one another. We've got a lot of things coming up. There's an oneg today, right, Teresa? An oneg. Judaica store is open, the oneg will be over here. So we'll hopefully have a time of sharing around question and comment time, perhaps. We'll hope to have that. the Boskies are coming in November 21st. That's going to be very exciting. Cynthia here today? Cynthia? No. She wanted to share about Israel at some point. She was in Israel and had a great something to share, I think. Also, Marty Goetz, of course, for Hanukkah. We're going to have an amazing Hanukkah this year. And don't forget the regional coming up. But let's just look at Genesis 18 now. Just go right to there. And it says, read with me if you would. It says, then Adonai appeared to him. Adonai appeared to him. And, of course, I'm using the TLV, the Tree of Life translation, uses Adonai, capital letters, for the Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, for God's name. Because we really don't know, no matter what anyone tells you, we don't know the exact pronunciation of it. They're only guesses. And like one rabbi pointed out, I thought it was good, where people are all caught up with how do we pronounce God's name and are we saying, you know, there's no record of Yeshua in the Gospels. We read of Yeshua's words. No record that he ever referred to the Father by that name. So if you're so obsessed with having to pronounce it right, realize that Yeshua doesn't give us any record, the Gospels, of him pronouncing the Tetragrammaton, the Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, the four-letter name of God, Yud-Heh-Vav. So, so we'll just say Adonai like they're doing here, even though we know it's really Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. But he appeared, I want you to notice, he appeared to them at Mamre's large trees while he was sitting in the entrance of his tent during the heat of the day. Now, this is just after the circumcision, which is for an adult, really an exciting experience. So actually, one of the reasons that the rabbis think that these three men, as we'll see, appeared in a moment, is that they were angels and that one of them was there actually to heal Abraham, to help the healing process. And it says that when he lifted up his eyes to see, suddenly, and the word is hine, let's say hine, it's right up there for you, vihine, and suddenly, or and behold. In other words, it's almost like, it says three men were standing right by him. It's almost like they materialized out of thin air. I don't know, like the old Star Trek, I don't know what did they call that when they would just... Wow, you have a lot of Star Trekies here. All right. What's the new one that's coming out sometime? Not Star Trek, but Star Wars. Yeah, the new Star Wars. That looks good. That definitely looks good. I don't want to miss that. So maybe a group can go in one of the openings and see it. But anyway, so it was a sudden experience. Three men were standing right by him. When he saw them, he ran from the entrance of his tent to meet them. And this is, who were these three men? Well, who were these three men? I have a few ideas, okay? Who were these three men? This is a couple possibilities. I think I shared that's possible. These three. Just possible. Not sure, but, or, they're all Jewish, you know. All these, they're all Jewish. Three Stooges, Marx Brothers. So it's possible. Now, I didn't realize, but, move on. All right. Park there. Thanks. All right, but the idea actually is that I don't necessarily agree with this, but just give you what the rabbis think on this. They say they were three angels, and I'll show you who I think they were in a minute. Michael, Michael, to inform Abraham of Sarah's conception. Then Gabriel, to overthrow Sodom. And then Raphael, to heal Abraham. As I said, they believe it was the third day after the circumcision. As an adult. So, but who were they really? Well, we see that they are called men in chapter 8, verses 9, verses 10. We see them mentioned in verse 13, 16, 17, 22, and 33. 19:1 calls them angels, two of them angels, or malach is the word for angels, malachim, angels, messengers. And yet, it also refers to these, one of them speaking is Adonai in the conversation that we see. It's the Lord. So sometimes it's they, sometimes it's he, sometimes it's I. God is speaking to them in the first person, the men. And interesting, we see it in other words, verse 9, they said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? They were showing hospitality. I think we had a slide on that. Yeah, hospitality back a little. Is that already back there? Hospitality is a biblical principle in Judaism, and of course should be in Christianity as well, of course. But showing hospitality comes from the Torah. Love the strangers. V'ahavtam et hager. Love the stranger. And in the New Testament, in the Brit Chadashah, the New Covenant, Phylozenia is to the love of strangers. So many verses on that. And so they're eager to show hospitality, Abraham and Sarah, to these three men who are coming by them, who are come by suddenly. And he says, where's your wife? They said, where's Sarah, your wife? And then in the 10th, verse 10, then he said, who's speaking here? I will most surely return to you in about a year's time. Surprisingly, Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Behold, Sarah, your wife. Who's speaking there? Who's telling Abraham that Sarah is going to have a son? The Lord, right? The Lord is speaking, obviously. We could say it was an angel representing God, possibly, but either way, it's the Lord speaking. Sarah is, who else could give Sarah a son in her old age, do the impossible, but who? God, okay? Hashem, Adonai, the Lord, all right? Sarah was listening at the entrance of the tent, all right? What do we call that? I think it's eavesdropping, right? She's not there, but she's like trying to overhear what's going on. And this is a humorous, actually, story here. To me, one of the funniest things in the Bible, in the Torah, where the Lord, now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. Sarah stopped having the way of women. She couldn't have she could have children any longer. And so she laughed to herself. She says, oh, come on, when she hears this, how am I going to have a child, you know? I'm too old for that. She's laughing. And the Lord, of course, knows. And so verse 13, the Lord said to Abraham, why is it that Sarah laughed, saying, can I really give birth when I'm so old? Is anything too hard, too difficult for the Lord? Right? Is anything? And of course, is anything too difficult for the Lord? Well, come on, there's got to be a few things. No? Okay. All right. Just wanted to check. All right. So at the appointed time, he repeats it, I will return to you in about a year, and Sarah will have a son. And this is kind of funny. Verse 15, Sarah denied it. She said, I didn't laugh, for she was afraid. But he said, no, for you did laugh. And I wonder if that went back and forth more than what's here. You know, yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you. No, I didn't. He says, just admit it. You don't have to be afraid of admitting it. Admit it. You did. You didn't believe. and then the men got up. Who? Verse 16. Notice that the men. So there were how many men? Three men. They got up and they looked down over Sodom. And this word looked in the Hebrew means to gaze in connection with calamity. This word is used that they're gazing down in terms of calamity. and Abraham walked with them to send them off. And then Adonai said, should I keep a secret from Abraham? This is interesting. Should I conceal from Abraham what I'm about to do, seeing that Abraham will most certainly become a great and mighty nation in him? Now, I don't think God is deliberating we forgot that one. Yeah, that's a cute one. Just wanted to show you that. That's a cute one. Have you seen that? So for those that are pregnant, I just thought that's a really cute thing by Jeff Larson, you know. So, yeah, wow, she was carrying a lot, right? All right, we can go on. Anyway, let's go on. Thanks. There we go. All right, one more. Perfect. All right. So, so they're looking down. And I don't think they're deliberating. God is deliberating whether or not he should tell Abraham about this. You know, there's a beautiful verse I love. I always connect with this. Is John 15:15. Maybe you thought of it as well. John 15:15, where Yeshua says, I am no longer calling you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. Now I have called you what? Friends. In Hebrew, it's chaverim. Let's say chaverim. I realize this is Greek, but, you know, Greek. But we're saying, but it would be chaverim. I call you friends because everything I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Wow, that's intimacy, isn't it, with God? He wants to consider us friends. It's not a cheap, casual term. That means he shares with us secrets. So I don't think God is deliberating. I think this is a rhetorical question here in Genesis 18 that God is really saying, almost facetiously maybe, but definitely in rhetorical manner, I'm not going to keep this from Abraham. Why should I? I could never do that. I can't keep this from Abraham. He's my friend. I'm trusting him. I'm counting on him. And so he shares with him what is going to happen. And look at verse 20. Adonai said the outcry. Who said the outcry? Right. The Lord says, Adonai says, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great indeed, and their sin is very grievous indeed. Okay? now, again, who is speaking? The Lord is speaking. And as we're going to see here, there transpires an amazing dialogue, an amazing negotiation, if you will, a discussion between Abraham and God, which Abraham initiates. And how much God wants us to initiate with him in many situations and not just wait for him to tell us to do something or to ask, but he's waiting for us to initiate. Abraham initiates the concern out of concern over Sodom, this amazing intercession for Sodom and Amorah, or Amorah, or Sodom and Gomorrah. But it is let's go back to that in a minute, but it says the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great indeed, and their sin is very grievous indeed. I want to go down and see if they deserve destruction, as its outcry has come to me, and If not, I will know. Now, when we think of Sodom, of course, there's a sin that's associated with Sodom in our English language, right? Sodomy, homosexuality. And yet, look at Ezekiel, and that was a horrible, horrific sin there that was prominent in among the people. But look at Ezekiel 16, if you would. Ezekiel 16, and it's as grotesque and perverse as these were, because we see that when two of the men, the angels are down in there, that the men are calling for them in the community to come out. They want to rape them, basically. and it's a horrible scene. But but when God defines the sin of Sodom, what does he call it? What does he focus upon? I want you to notice this. Five sins are mentioned. Ezekiel 16, verse 49 and 50. Behold, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. Pride, gluttony, careless ease. So had she and her daughters. And she did not strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. Really, the poor and the needy are the afflicted, those who are oppressed, those who are abused. She did nothing about it. So they were haughty, which means basically exalted, proud, and committed abomination before me. Therefore, I removed them when I saw it. So pride, meaning exaltation in the Hebrew, and then the gluttony. The Hebrew is really, it means gluttony, but it's fullness of bread or a complete amount of bread. In other words, there's no hunger. There's no need. I've got everything. I don't have a need for anything. And God says this was their sin. And then he says careless ease. It's translated here in the TLV. And it really means, that's good. It means quiet, secure, and content. You say, well, isn't that a good thing? Well, not in this case, the way God is using it. He says, there's no fight in you. There's no concern. There's no action. You got it made. You're okay. And it's kind of a double in the Hebrew, two words together. It's tranquil and undisturbed. You're not disturbed. People are suffering. This is going on. Terrible things are, you know, people are, there's people that are, and you don't care. You don't care. You're okay. I'm okay. That's all that matters. And this is what, isn't it interesting? This is what God calls the sin of Sodom. And when we typically think of Sodom and Gomorrah, what do we think about? Homosexuality, which was a horrible condition. But, you know, I wonder, you know, should we measure and weigh our political candidates, our presidential candidates, by these things as well? And people are running for office as much as their stand on other issues that Christians always seem to focus on, always a few issues. But what about these issues that God says here? They're just as important and maybe more so because they lay way to a condition of the other things happening. So at verse 22, let's follow it back in Genesis. Verse 22, the men turned from there and went toward Sodom, but Abraham was still standing before who? Okay, the Lord, right? I don't know. He's standing for it, and Abraham drew near. Now notice, I'm just going to jump over to 19. We'll come back to this. But 19:1, so the men left, and Abraham stood before the Lord. And look at 19, verse 1. Now, who came to Sodom? The two angels came to Sodom in the evening while Lot was still sitting in the gate of Sodom. I remember the first time I saw this, I was just like thrilled. I still remember I was driving, and I don't recommend doing this, but I was driving to New England from Pennsylvania to speak to, in some situation, and so it was a long drive, and I was in my Volkswagen car at the time, and I had my Hebrew Bible and my English Bible on the table. They didn't have iPhones or anything in those days, nothing. But I just remember seeing that here is Adonai, it's Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, wherever, and God is speaking, and yet here are, so three men, two are Are all three angels? I don't think so. Two were angels, and one was God in the flesh. We call it a theophany, right? And I think I have a list of those made a while back. But theophany, there we go, see? Theophanies in the Christian world might call, or Christophany, you know. But an appearance where God takes a form, a human form, but it's not in the same way as the incarnation. John 1:14, where the Word became flesh, where God became a human being in that sense. But it's an appearance, a pre-appearance of the Messiah. And these are examples up here that I have for you of theophanies that I've compiled in the scriptures. So one was actually God speaking, because Abraham stayed with the Lord conversing and the other two went. And I was just so excited when I saw this. I was, you know, hard to stay on the road just because I remember, wow, God, here is God appearing in human form. And let's read on. Verse 22, then the men turned from there and Abraham standing. And in verse 23, Abraham drew near. The word is nagash. Let's say nagash. That's on the bottom there. Nagash. It's drawing near. And it can mean to draw near, to come forward to battle. To battle. He's coming forward and he's going to engage the Lord here. This isn't some passive relationship. This isn't some, okay, whatever happens, happens. No, this is an active, this is a battle. This is warfare. And he says, he drew near and he said, will you really, the Hebrew word ha'af here, it can mean anger. He's stirred up. Will you really sweep away the righteous with the wicked? And so this ha'af can also mean, well, anyway, I won't get into that. But he's negotiating. And who, the righteous, who is Abraham? Who does he have in mind that he mentions the righteous here? Maybe his family? Are they righteous? A remnant of Sodomites, perhaps, that are righteous? There's some that are not, that live there, that are not partake. But did God know how many righteous there were when Abraham starts negotiating with him? Then why did he let him do this? Because he wanted the engagement. He wanted the process. And you know, Peter, as I said last week, actually, at the end, Peter calls Lot righteous. Three times. A tzaddik. Righteous. Three times. 2 Peter 2:7. And who is Abraham really interceding for here? Who is he going to end up rescuing? Who is God going to rescue because of this? His nephew, what's his name? Lot. Yes, Lot. And may I just say, we never know. Think about it. We never really know what's going on under the surface with people, with someone. You don't know what's going on. We see the outer appearance. We see the exterior. But God sees, looks on the heart, right? 1 Samuel 16:17, judge not by the outward appearance, for the Lord, man looks on the outward appearance, the Lord looks on the heart. God sees what's going on underneath. That's why it says of the Messiah in Isaiah 11:3 that he will not judge in one of the prophecies, Isaiah 11:3, he will not judge by the sight of his eyes or the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness he will judge. He sees, Yeshua said, don't judge according to appearance, make a righteous judgment in John 7:24. And so we don't know what's going on. And here Abraham starts to intercede. He says, what if there's 50 righteous within the city, verse 24? Will you really sweep away and not spare the place for the sake of 50 who are in it? Far be it from you. Look at the way he's talking with the Lord. Far be it from you to do such a thing, to cause the righteous to die with the wicked. You wouldn't do that, Lord. In other words, so the righteous and the wicked share the same fate? Far be it from you. Come on, God, you wouldn't do that. Shall not the judge of the whole earth exercise justice? And now God responds. Long verbiage by Abraham, just a very simple response by God. And Adonai said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous people within the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake. So Abraham says, okay, that's a start. Let's go. Let's continue here. He answered and said, look, if I speak, I have decided to speak to my Lord, though I'm dust and ashes. Suppose there are 50, the 50 righteous are lacking five. Well, there's not 50, but there's 45. Will you destroy the whole city for 45? For just because there's not quite 50, because you said you wouldn't for 50, and there's five less. That's, you know, five less. That's not so much, five less. This is real negotiation here, isn't it? This is where it started. and he said, and the Lord said, I will not destroy it if I find 45 there. All right, he continues. So he spoke, perhaps 40 will be found there. And he said, God said, I will not do it for the sake of 40. He said, please, my Lord, now don't be angry, so I may speak, perhaps 30 be found there. He said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. He said, look, pray, I have decided to speak to my Lord, perhaps 20 be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for the sake of, how many? 20. Then he said, please let not my Lord be angry, so I may speak once more. Oh, Abraham, why did you say once more? God taking you at your word. Why did you limit God? Why did you stop there? Perhaps 10 will be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for the sake of the 10. Look at verse 33. Now when he had finished speaking to Abraham, Adonai left, and Abraham returned to his place. If you'll notice, I counted them up. How many times does Abraham ask God for sparing the people? Six times. One short of God's number, seven, the complete number. One short. He reasoned with God. Six times he asked, and God replies and complies each of the six times. But he limited his requests. He was afraid, maybe, to ask too much. He set a cap, which God didn't do. One more. Did he stop at 10 because he knew God would not spare the world of 8 in Noah's time? In other words, 8 people, Noah and the ark, wasn't enough to prevent God from destroying the world? Did he think that there were 10 righteous in his own family and that was enough? Maybe he thought there was with his four, I think he had four daughters, their husbands. Maybe he thought that. We don't know. But the important thing here is Abraham initiated the conversation with God. And it differs from God's pronouncement to Noah, because this was open-ended. God didn't say definitively, as I read it, I don't see it. God said definitively he's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. He says, I'm going to see and make an evaluation after I go down and see what the condition. So there's room, there's play here for negotiation. And sometimes that's what prayer is, that we do negotiate. God wants us to initiate. God wants us to be active, and he wants us to care. And he's not intimidated or upset because we are a little aggressive with him. But you see the respect. You see the respect that Abraham has. He says, don't be angry. Lord, let me ask, you know, you wouldn't do this. He reasons with God on the basis of God's character and nature, who God is. He said, God, I know you. I know what your word says. You are a just God, but you're a merciful God. You love the humankind. You don't want to have to do this. You don't enjoy bringing destruction at all, but you hate evil, and you have to judge it, and you will. What has God left open-ended for us? What is he waiting for us to initiate in conversation or intercession with him? The two angels came to Sodom in chapter 19, verse 1. And I have to address this because I have to say, every time I've seen this, it troubled me. And I said, so I dug a little deeper. I said, I got to find an answer to this because I have trouble. When I read in chapter 19 how Lot in verse 8 offers his daughters to these sick, grotesque people outside that want to molest, want to rape the men, the angels that were there. And by the way, these angels took care of them. Boy, when they blinded them, they struck them blind at the doorway of the house, verse 11. So we sure know they had power to do what they wanted to do. They struck the men in the doorway of the house with blindness. But it was a horrific scene. It was a testy, difficult scene. Remember the grabbing, the angels grabbing Lot, bringing him into the house. It's all the commotion. And it troubles me why he says, I have these two daughters that are virgins and that have, you know, never been intimate. And it says, you can have them. And I said, boy, that's horrible. That's horrible. So the question is, how sinful I did, how sick, how cowardly, you know, or is there another interpretation? Let me give you another possible interpretation. Perhaps this was actually not an offer that Lot anticipated being received, but it actually was an insincere gesture in order to gain time. Maybe even sarcastic, like Henny Youngman, take my wife, please. That's for old timers, if you ever heard Henny Youngman. He used to say, hey, take my wife, please. He was an old Jewish comedian for the old, I don't know, what do they call it? The Catskills, I think. The old. But in other words, maybe Lot was saying, there's no way you want my daughters. You guys don't even like women. There's no way you want me to, or as wicked as you are, at least you would never take a father's daughters. I don't know, but it's one way that I find that I can reconcile this, because the New Covenant calls Lot righteous. And we see that he was trying to rescue these men, his guests, didn't want them to be. He was trying to save them. And we see some other good things. The New Testament says that he was tortured inside by seeing the behavior outwardly of all what was around him. So that's one way of, I give you, a pass on to you of interpreting. Maybe he knew that they wouldn't. He was trying to buy time so he could rescue these guys, but he wasn't really offering his daughters for them. I hope that was the case, and I believe it probably was. And so we see the judgment fall. We see the haste, the urgency with which the angels want Lot to escape and trying to rescue his family. In verse 14, get up, get out of this place. Lot tells his sons-in-law, and they just were thinking it was like a joker. They just didn't take him seriously at all. They were not godly people, godly men. And so the angels, verse 15, they rushed Lot, saying, get up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here. There's a sense of urgency, and that can be good. By the way, I think that's the greatest purpose of the book of Revelation, the apocalypse, the book of Revelation. That, you know, we can. It's not as matter of just being able to interpret accurately all the symbols and all the meanings, although we can certainly look at it, and, you know, we should. But the blessing for reading and hearing, keeping the words of the prophecy of this book, beginning and end of the book, book of Revelation, is ultimately the whole point, should give us a sense of urgency. The time is coming close. Yeshua is coming back. God is going to judge the world. We need to be ready. How are our lives? Are we ready for that? Are we living in such a way? That's the urgency. And as you read that book, the first time I read through that book, I remember I was in Israel as a young believer, very almost new believer, a year in the Lord, I think. And I remember I just took a day. I had a day I could spend it at my relative's house. And I just read on the floor. I just remember it, reading through the book of Revelation and feeling like, wow, I'm this little speck amidst this awesome, overwhelming plan that the God, the creator, that the Almighty has for the universe, the world, and what he's done and what he's going to do. And I just felt, I can't believe he's found me. I can't believe I know him. So many don't. And I just the overwhelming, that book made me want to live like never before for God. And I think we're going to have it in the Institute at some point. At some point, there'll be some classes on it. Right, Sean? I think so. December 5th? Really? December 5th. Wow. Well, should get a good crowd out for now, I hope. All right. And so what did God do? He said, flee, don't look. Look at verse 17. He said, don't look. He grabbed his wife's hand back up to 16. Lot hesitated. So the men grabbed his hand, his wife's hand, and his two daughters' hand. So how many people? Four, just four. Wow. Because of Adonai's compassion for him, and they brought him out and left him outside the people, the city, and they brought him outside. One said, flee for your life. Don't look behind you. And don't stop anywhere in the surrounding area. Keep going. It sounds like what Yeshua talked about when you're fleeing Jerusalem. He says, don't stop. Verse 22, hurry, flee for safety, because I cannot do anything until you arrive there. And verse 24, Adonai rained sulfur and fire upon Sodom and Gomorrah from Adonai out of the sky. Verse 26, but his wife, what had happened to her? She looked behind. Yes, she looked back. She looked back, and she was turned into a pillar of salt. She looked behind him, the Hebrew reads. She looked behind him. And, you know, there's an application I'll just quickly make of that. I got to bring this to a close in the next 5 minutes. So, regret. Sometimes we look back and we regret, and we look back and we long for something in the past, and we start, you know, it says Ecclesiastes 7:10, do not say, why were the former days better than this? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Sometimes we look. Paul said, forgetting the things that are behind and reaching forth to the things that are before, Philippians chapter 3. I press toward the mark of the prize of the high calling of God in Messiah, Yeshua. I'm pressing for. Look, there's a time when we, of course, keep things in perspective and memory is good, but to regret is not healthy. When you start, the enemy comes in, the accuser of the brethren, and says, if only this didn't happen. If only you had done this. If only you hadn't done that. That's from the enemy. That's from the adversary, from the evil one. It's not from God. God doesn't want us to live that way. Regret doesn't help us. Recognizing things, of course, can help, you know. But we go move forward in the plan of God. Trust God, trusting God, and, you know, and His Word, and His promises to turn the bad things into something good if we love Him, because we love Him and are called according to His purpose. You know, Romans 8:28 and many verses. And so it says in verse 29, and that's the same thing, by the way, the accuser of the brethren, Revelation 12:10, he also not only accuses you to yourself, but he accuses someone else to you, right? Accuses your family member, accuses your friend, and it falsely accuses, you know, and fills your mind with this that kind of garbage. So cast it down, reject it. God remembered, it says verse 29, Abraham, and sent Lot out of the midst. In other words, God spared and rescued Lot for Abraham's sake. Who may God save for your sake? Who may God rescue for your sake or my sake? Because we stand in that gap for someone else, you know? We're to stand in the gap for others, you know? Ezekiel 22, 30, and 31 says that. I was going to read that earlier. I'll read it now. Ezekiel 22, 30, and 31. I searched for someone among them who would build up the wall and stand in the breach before me for the land so that I would not destroy it, but I found no one. So God wants us to stand in the gap. Jeremiah 5:1, roam through the streets of Jerusalem. Look around and consider. Search through her squares if you can find a person. If there is one who does justice, who seeks truth, then I'll pardon the city. Isaiah 59:16 and 63:5, he saw that there was no one. He was astonished. There was no one was interceding. Therefore, his own arm brought salvation for him. I looked, but there was no one to help. I was amazed, but no one was assisting. So my own arm won the victory for me. And Ezekiel 9:4, it's interesting that Adonai said, he said, go to Ezekiel, he said, go throughout the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and make a mark on the foreheads of the people who sigh and moan over all the abominations that are committed in it. Wow. God said, I care. You know, in Colossians 4, I think we read this in the opening, Epaphras, it says, Colossians 4:12, Paul points him out. He's one of his own, a slave, one of your own, a slave of Messiah Yeshua greets you. He is always laboring in prayer on your behalf so you may stand complete in everything in God's will. He's gone through much trouble for you and for those. He's interceding for you. He's standing in the gap for you. And we stand in the gap for one another. And so, life is short, very short, and it can be taken from us at any time. Psalm 39, let me know, O Lord, my end, and what is the number of my days? Psalm 39:5. Let me know how short-lived I am. Behold, you made my days mere handbreadths, and my lifetime is nothing before you. Surely all humanity is but vapor. Selah. You know what Selah means, right? Think about it. Really? That's what I think. I mean, it was a musical interlude. Stop and think about it. Think about it. Let it sink in. When the news came that Keith Green and two of his children, how many years ago was that? I don't, but there. His three-year-old Josiah and two-year-old Bethany had died in a plane crash along with nine others. When that news came, he was one of my heroes. I mean, his music helped shape my zeal for the Lord and love for the Lord. Who could understand? Emily, her sudden departure has stunned every one of us that know them. Her many friends and classmates. Wow, what a time this has been this week. And thank you, Coldedy family, for those that interrupted your schedules and got there to support them. I know that means so much to Jim and Kat. And I know some couldn't because, you know, weren't able to, would be there. Let's continue to support them. It doesn't end now, as we know, but what a service. I don't even want to call it a funeral. I call it a graduation service. Never been at anything like that. I know Teresa said that to nothing, and none of you said that. I mean, the presence of God, the signs in the heavens. I know Kat wouldn't mind me saying that. You know, she said yesterday, was there for a little bit, and she said that she came and said, "Did you know?" She was telling us that I think it was her relative, who's not a religious man, a Catholic, he's Catholic by religion, but not active, came up with tears in his eyes. He said, "I've never seen it." He said, "You know what? I looked through the rotunda up through saw the sky, and there was an E in the clouds." He says it was unbelievable, E in the clouds. And Kat said when she heard that, she broke down crying. Said, "I know. It just gives me now. I have so much peace that Emma is with the Lord. You know, I know where he is." God did that for my dad at his memorial service. For Francis and I, when we were there, in the same way, the wind, but the wind all of a sudden just came out of nowhere, this wind of gust at a certain point, and it was like the Spirit of God. And that happened yesterday. Francis mentioned, says the wind started gusting up. Did you see that? Of course, in Hebrew and Greek, ruach, wind, spirit, breath, pneuma in Greek, wind, spirit, breath. It's the Spirit of God. He was there. And we do not grieve like those that have no hope. 1 Thessalonians 4:13. We grieve, but not like those with no hope. And Psalm 16:11. Seven joys are in your presence, the light at your right hand forevermore. As many verses we could give. But let's treasure the time that we have and treasure one another. Treasure one another. I know I was traveling a windy road just the other night in the rain, when all that rain, and it was a very windy road, not a windy road, windy road, and I started hydroplaning, and I just thought, this is it. I mean, tires, I guess I need new tires. I need to take action on that, but I was just headed right off into a ditch, and then it you know, caught, and it happened actually twice. I was going too fast, probably, but it was a very windy road, and, you know, but every time you think, you know, how much time do we have, right? How much time do we have? I'll close with this. I'll really close. Ezekiel 12, 1. Give you these verses. Verses 1, 13, and 14. So remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of misery come, and years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. 13 and 14. A final word. When all has been heard, fear God and keep his mitzvot, his commandments. For this applies to all mankind, all humankind. God will bring every deed into judgment, including everything that is hidden, whether good or evil. Father, we thank you.